Listening to Into the Groovy with DJ Dick Rockhart.
beneath the rock. Crustacean rough and steely strong. A weathered eye with a ticking heart. I know where and why, but not how long. Exposed against the night. Colors flip and reunite under the black light. Sucker punch the misery truck. Sweet jitteries, random luck. Trick the body, but the mind won't follow. The mission is mighty, but the foundation is hollow. Revealed by the night. Switching the polarity of sight against a black light. Far below the surface, waiting for semaphore light in the dark. And they play for me with synergy, lethargy, fantasies, broken needles and dead batteries. Suspended by the night. It's funny the things you see. You flip on the black light. Exposed against the night. Colors flip and reunite. That's the lure of the black light. We'll be right back.
sound like fear music. Who cares what it's called? You're not used to thinking of your heads. You've got to sing the name.
Thank you. There is nothing in the world more helpless and irresponsible and depraved than a man in the depths of an ether binge. And I knew we'd get into that rotten stuff pretty soon.
Man Prigozhin again. Everything from where he is to where he may well be going. Hello, I'm Mark Galliotti. And welcome to my view of Russia in Moscow shadows. This podcast of varying length, frequency and format, yet always reassuringly low production values, is supported by generous and perspicacious patrons like you, and also by the crisis exercise software company Conductor. So yes, I'm afraid we're still on Prigozhin in terms of the way he's still naturally dominating the news cycle. He either is the gift that keeps giving or the annoying fungal infection that just won't clear up. You can take your pick. as a way of handling that, and also simply because I'm committed to do so, what I'm going to do is basically structure this particular podcast around a series of questions that I have been sent at different times by my esteemed oligarchs / hetmen. Reminder, if you are at that top tier of the patron system, you are able to ask me questions at any time, and I do commit to answer them, whether it's in terms of incorporating them into the podcast or answering them directly through the Patreon platform. Anyway, as I said, given that these are the questions that have been exercising my most noble and generous patrons, this is where we'll do. And so, well, let me just start with the obvious thing. Where's Prigozhin? And the honest answer is, well, certainly as of this morning, this is Sunday the 9th of July, we don't really know for sure. It does appear, though, that he is in Russia. I mean, certainly if one believes Lukashenko, which normally is not necessarily a very wise thing to do, given that the Belarusian president is, we could put it generously, a showman, and certainly has at times an only nodding acquaintanceship with the truth. But nonetheless, he probably is right when he says that Prigozhin seems to have travelled to Belarus, but since then travelled back to Russia. He was saying, oh, he could be in Moscow, he could be in St. Petersburg. And I think the implication is, quite frankly, that he is doing the rounds, maintaining his connections perhaps with the Wagner fighters, but also, I think, probably assembling assets and closing businesses down. I will come to his wider Concord Management Group sort of holding company in a moment. So this is the interesting thing. He's in Russia. We don't know where. Indeed, the Russian state claims not to know, with, I think it fair to say, less than entirely conviction. We even had Dmitry Peskov, the presidential spokesman, saying that the Russian state has neither the desire nor the capability to keep tracks on Prigozhin's movements. Now, I mentioned in the last podcast how catastrophically, in my opinion, the FSB really has responded overall to this crisis, as so many others. But if you can honestly tell me that the FSB does not have teams monitoring Prigozhin, his communications, his travels and so forth, then they really are even more catastrophically and shockingly incompetent than I would assume myself. So, look, he's clearly out and about. The implication is therefore that as part of either the actual deal that was struck, which remember we've never really had fully confirmed, we're just simply relying on Peskov himself, which again, as has been demonstrated, is not always the wisest thing. But nonetheless, it seems to be that as part of the deal or as part of the implicit political modus vivendi that has emerged, Putin is willing to give Prigozhin a certain amount of breathing room, presumably with the expectation that in due course he will go to Minsk. It's worth noting, after all, that there was an interview with one of the Wagner field commanders, Anton Elizarov, who goes by the call sign Lotus, who was saying that basically Wagner people had been given leave, because after all they had hard fighting and it's time they had a bit of time to themselves, but that after that, then there's all the hard work of essentially re-establishing themselves in Belarus. So there's at least one field commander who's at least willing to claim that that is indeed the plan. So I think exactly, it's the equivalent of Prigozhin being given a bit of leave to get his affairs in order before he heads to Minsk. But that's just a guess of mine, and to be perfectly honest, it very much depends on what Prigozhin does in that time and whether or not the state actually decides to turn against him. Because, of course, Prigozhin is still, I would suggest, in his own way, dangerous. And this leads me to do the second and third questions that I really want to kind of address together. First of all, why on earth does Prigozhin appear to be popular? And secondly, what is going on with the Whigs? Now, I'm sure you know the Whig story, but if not, anyway, I will explain it in a moment. So, Prigozhin's popularity, and this is based primarily on what we saw. We saw, for example, that when Wagner was withdrawing from Rostov-on-Don, there were substantial crowds, no, clearly were not Wagner fighters in civvies, who were there to applaud, and there were people wanting to take selfies with Prigozhin and everything else. Now, putting aside just simply the fact that there will be someone who wants to take a selfie with any vaguely famous person, beyond that, I think it is clear that there is a degree of popularity. But, and I think this is really important, we should appreciate it's not so much for Prigozhin the person. It's not so much people are saying, gosh, an ex-con who managed to parlay a hot dog business into a multi-million pound, dollar, whatever, business empire, courtesy of the patronage of the Kremlin, and who sanctions deserters being killed by being sledgehammered in the head, and who thinks that's a fun enough meme that it's worth basically making the sledgehammer your personal symbol. Wow, that sounds like the kind of guy I would want to support. No, it's not so much that. It is rather that, as is always the case, and I think it's particularly the case in non-authentic democracies. Let's put it that way. In other words, a country that on the one hand has the forms of democracy and tells people that they get to choose their national leaders, but on the other hand has that process incredibly managed and limited. People are expecting to find figures that they can follow and support, and they are looking for ones. And that tends to mean that people have, even more so than in other systems, values and attitudes imposed upon them by the popular will. In other words, it's not so much Prigozhin the man as what people decide that Prigozhin represents. So on the one hand, it's the solid Russian mujik, the man who's willing to stand up for what he thinks is right, whether it's defending his own guys or calling out the corruption, bureaucratism and incompetence at the head of the system. Now, let's be perfectly honest. On the one hand, Prigozhin clearly did have some kind of an emotional connection to his guys. You know, you think of those videos where he's standing in front of dead bodies screaming, "Where's my fucking ammunition?" I mean, I don't think that was entirely confected. I think that was real, and I think it wasn't just about him feeling that his amour propre was being challenged because Shoigu and the other figures within the hierarchy were not taking him seriously enough. No, I mean, I think there is probably that sense of that these are my boys and that I have some kind of commitment to them. But at the same time, you know, Prigozhin oversaw the consumption of thousands, maybe even tens of thousands, but I would say more likely thousands of certainly dead convict recruits who were used in these sort of so-called meat assaults in Bakhmut, basically human wave attacks in order to discomfit, flush out and locate for subsequent artillery attacks the Ukrainian defending forces. So, you know, this is not actually someone who felt a really keen attachment to his men, but nonetheless that become part of the legend. Likewise, the man who's willing to stand up against the corruption and so forth, you know, that although it's bizarre to think of a murderous millionaire as the tribune of the little man, you know, but nonetheless, that's how, again, a different strand of the myth evolves. That no one else is willing to call out what's going on, but Prigozhin was willing to do that. And I think there's a third cognate but slightly different element of the myth, which is obviously Prigozhin becomes invested with the mantle of Wagner as war heroes. This sense that this is miserable war going on, it doesn't seem to be going well, but Wagner, one way or the other, they're the ones who are actually out there on the front line, taking territory, and generally speaking, being precisely the force that, more than anything else, actually Russians can feel proud of. Now again, there is a certain depressing irony in the thought that a collection of mercenaries and murderers should be considered to be the sort of the great champions. But again, look, you know, people invest things with the meanings that they want. So Prigozhin represents Wagner. Wagner represents one apparently bright spark in this dark and miserable war, and therefore that's that. And I suppose, you know, actually thinking about it, there is a fourth strand as well, which is just generally that sense of rooting for the underdog. And again, you know, I mean, again, it's bizarre to think of a millionaire with his own mercenary army as an underdog. But anyway, compared with the Kremlin, compared with the oligarchs and such like, he is. So rooting for the underdog as a way of venting your own dissatisfactions, precisely because you all feel like underdogs. You feel that the system, for all its claims of representing you and so forth, is actually screwing you over. You feel that the system doesn't listen to you, And in some ways, the very fact of anyone who's willing to challenge that, well, good for them. So this is it. It's Prigozhin the symbol rather than Prigozhin the man. There is, after all, no kind of Prigozhin political platform. The closest there is to it, after all, is when earlier in his political struggles with the establishment, he was saying that, in fact, Russia ought to basically become North Korea for a few years because that's what it would take to defeat Ukraine. Now, I'm not convinced that that was a serious proposal. In some ways, it may well have been trying to give a sense of actually what it would take to defeat Ukraine as a way of saying, look, maybe we should be thinking twice about this war. I mean, I think there is a degree to which actually Prigozhin was articulating a view within the technocrat camp, which is precisely that this war was badly thought through, is not going to go anywhere well, and therefore, ideally, we'd want to start thinking about extricating ourselves. But for whatever reason, look, that's the closest thing to a kind of political programme we had, really, other than I would like Defence Minister Shoigu and Chief of the General Staff Gerasimov's heads on pikes, please. Thank you very much. So it's not actually as if Prigozhin represents anything except dissatisfaction, except a sense that, yes, we are happy to see anyone being able to buck the trend. And this is precisely, in my opinion, why Prigozhin is dangerous now. It is not so much Wagner, not so much the military forces that he may or may not still control, or at least whose loyalties he can still command. It is